I'm going to take a reading from the book of Joshua. I've read a number of times from the book of Joshua, and this passage will be one that's familiar. I thought about just reading a few verses, but I think I'd like to read the biggest part of the chapter to set the stage and the background for what we want to talk about this morning. The title of my lesson would be Critical Choices. Critical Choices. And so we're going to begin at the first verse of the 24th chapter of Joshua and probably read down through end of the 28th verse. So bear with us as we try to read this, and I'll try not to stumble over too many of these words. It says, "And Joshua gathered all of the tribes of Israel to Shechem, and he called for the elders of Israel and for their heads and for their judges and for their officers, and they presented themselves before God. And Joshua said unto the people, Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, Your fathers dwelt on the other side of the flood in old time, even Terah, the father of Abraham, and the father of Nahor, and they served other gods." Let me stop right there and tell you that it's not talking about the pre-flood world. It's talking about on the other side of the flooded river of Jordan, which they came across, and the Euphrates River. It's talking about the land of the Chaldeans where that Abraham had come from. When I used to read that, I used to think it was talking about pre-flood, but it wasn't. If you look that up in some other versions and some other uses of the words, you'll find out it's talking about where Abraham had come from, because he specifically refers to him. Abraham and the father of Nahor, and they served other gods. "And I took your father Abraham from the other side of the flood and led him throughout all the land of Canaan and multiplied his seed and gave him Isaac. And I gave unto Isaac Jacob and Esau. And I gave unto Esau Mount Seir to possess it. But Jacob and his children went down into Egypt. And I sent Moses also and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt according to that which I did among them, and afterwards I brought you out. And I brought your fathers out of Egypt, and ye came into the sea, and the Egyptians were pursued upon after your fathers with chariots and horsemen unto the Red Sea. And when they cried unto the Lord, he put darkness between you and the Egyptians, and he brought the sea upon them, and covered them. And your eyes have seen what I have done in Egypt, and you dwelt in the wilderness a long season. And I brought you into the land of the Amorites, which dwelt on the other side of Jordan, and they fought with you. And I gave them into your hands, that you might possess their land, and I destroyed them before you. Then Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, arose and warred against Israel, and sent and called Balaam, the son of Beor, to curse you. But I did not listen to Balaam, therefore he blessed you still, so I delivered you out of his hands. And you went over Jordan and came to Jericho. And the men of Jericho fought against you, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, the Jebusites. And I delivered them into your hands. And I sent the hornet before you." In other words, I sent the fear of you before, ahead of you, "which drove them out from before you, even the two kings of the Amorites, but not with thy sword, nor with thy bow. And I have given you a land which you did not labor, for which you did not labor, and cities which you built not, and you dwell in them, of the vineyards and the olive yards which you planted not, do you eat. Now therefore, fear the Lord." Now that's important. Notice that "therefore." He's referring back to what he had just recited before them. We'll pick up a little bit more of that in a moment. But he says, "Now therefore, because God has done all of these things for you, made himself known, serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve you the Lord. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And I'd say that probably 90% of us have a plaque in our home somewhere, or a little picture or something that says, as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. That's where this comes from. That's going to be our thought as we go a little bit forward. But that's in the middle of all of this that Joshua makes that declaration. You do what you want. You go the direction that you feel is right for you, considering all the things that you've seen and what you know. But regardless of what you choose to do, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. Folks, that's a great, important decision or choice to make. And the people answered and said, God forbid that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For the Lord our God, He it is that brought us up and our fathers out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage, and which did those great signs in our sight, and preserved us in all the way wherein we went, and among all the people through whom we passed. And the Lord drove out from before us all the people, even the Amorites which dwelt in the land. Therefore, we will also serve the Lord, for He is our God. And Joshua said unto the people, you cannot serve the Lord, for He is a holy God. I'll try to explain that seemingly tough passage in just a little bit. For He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions nor your sins. What He's saying is, you cannot serve God if you hold on to these false gods and these idols that have come out with you. Because Joshua was aware that many of them, that their heart was not after God, even though they may have said so with their mouths and they proclaimed that. He knew that there was evidence that they were not serving God. And He was telling them, you can't have it both ways. You're going to have to choose one or the other. And so that's what He's saying to them. He says, if you forsake the Lord and serve strange gods, then He will turn and do you hurt and consume you after that He has done you good. And the people said unto Joshua, no, but we will serve the Lord. And Joshua said unto the people, you are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen you, the Lord, to serve Him. And they said, we're witnesses. Now therefore, put away, said He, the strange gods which are among you, and incline your heart unto the Lord God of Israel. And the people said unto Joshua, the Lord our God will we serve, and His voice will we obey. So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day, and he set them a statute and an ordinance in Shechem. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and took a great stone, and he set it up there under an oak tree that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said unto all the people, behold, this stone shall be a witness unto us, for it hath heard all the words of the Lord which He spake unto us. It shall be therefore a witness unto you, lest you deny your God. So Joshua let the people depart, every man unto his own inheritance. And I'll stop right there. The scene that's before us is at the end of Joshua's life. Joshua is about ready to pass away. A great number of years has gone by. They've come into the land. They possess the land, and now Joshua is about ready to leave them, and he brings them and gathers them together to give them some final instructions and to bring them down to the point where that they need to make a choice. Now, that first song that we sang this morning, I can tell you the time and I can tell you the place where the Lord saved me by His marvelous grace. That's what's happening right here. There's a time and there's a place that is important. The fact that Joshua gathered them together at Shechem is an extremely important point, because Shechem was important to them. And so he brought them to the place where that they might be able to have some remembrance of things that had happened before. Let me give you just a little idea of Shechem. See, now those of us who have been saved, we may not be able to remember the exact day of the week or the exact hour on the clock, but there was something that happened there that was important. You see, we live in what we call time and space, and so time is important to us, and place is important to us. And so the timing of this is important in that Joshua is calling each one of them to accountability to make a personal choice. Not to rely upon the choice that their fathers had made. Some of the choices that their fathers had made were good choices. Some of them were bad choices. But the thing that we learn from this is that we all, at some point, have to decide for ourselves what we're going to do and the direction that we're going to go. And so they have benefited up to this point much by choices that their fathers had made, by bringing them out of Egypt, by crossing the Red Sea, by some of them, no doubt, engaging in the armed resistance that took place when they took Jericho and when they drove the tribes out. There were probably teenagers among them at this point in time that weren't engaged in those battles, but they had heard stories about them. But now the whole congregation is there, and so it's an important time for them. Something's about to change in their life. Joshua's no longer going to be their leader. We talked about that in Sunday school this morning, that when Jesus ascended, things were changing. He was no longer there in person, but he was going to empower them and going to be with them in spirit. So there was a change about to take place, and they had to make a choice of what they were going to do. It was the same here. And so there's a time in all of our lives where we are going to come before the Lord. That's what it says in that first verse that I read. It says, and they presented themselves unto the Lord. And they were before him. And folks, each of us at some point in our life is going to come before the Lord and be called in to make some choices. Those things, that's an important time. But I want to talk about that place as well. See, Shechem played an important part in their history. It was at Shechem that when Abraham was led out of Ur of Chaldees, you can find this back in the 12th chapter of Genesis, that when Abraham came out of Ur of the Chaldees and he was brought into the land that was going to be given to his posterity, to his children, grandchildren and all, the first place that he came to was Shechem. And it tells us back in that 12th chapter that in Shechem, he erected an altar under an oak tree that was there in Shechem. It was there at that very spot that Abraham at first got the promise of God. You'll read it in the 12th chapter where God promised Abraham that out of his seed that he would make them as the stars of the sky, that all nations of the earth would be blessed through him. It was at this very spot. Joshua chose this spot for a particular reason. It was a reminder to them that on this very spot there was something great that happened, that your ancestor Abraham, who had been 400 and some years at this point in the past, because we know that the children of Israel were in Egypt for 400 years, so many generations ago, something happened here that had it not happened here, you wouldn't be here today. And so it was an important place. Abraham had first built an altar there. And then he says that that God gave to Abraham a son, Isaac. And of Isaac, he gave him two sons, Jacob and Esau. And he said, Esau, I gave him this Mount Seir over here. But we know the story of Jacob. But if you read closely the story of Jacob, you'll find that after he went back to Ur, which is where he got his two wives, and his children were born there. But he came back to the land. He came back to for his father's death. And he came back to meet his brother. But when he came out of that land, and you can go back and read this in Genesis, that when he left Laban's house, his father-in-law's house, his wives did something. One of his wives did something. She took some of the gods of the house, which were strange gods, they were false gods, and she took them with them. And she hid them in among the things on the camel. And you read the life of Jacob and you'll find that he came back into the land. And where did he come to? He came to this oak tree here at Shechem. And it was there at that oak tree at Shechem that he called his family accountable. And he told them to put away their false gods that they had brought with them. That they were going to serve God And he took those seraphims or those false gods, and it says that he buried them under the oak tree there at Shechem. And he buried those false gods there. And so again, we find that that was an important place. Something important happened there. Jacob reminded his whole family that we're going to serve God. We're leaving all those false gods behind, and I want you to not think about them anymore. It was there at Shechem that Jacob dug a well. You can find that also, that he went to his neighbors and they fought him over a well that he had dug. And then he went to another place and he dug another well, and they fought him and took that well. And so it says, matter of fact, I'll tell you a little further down in this chapter, that he bought a piece of land right there at Shechem with 100 pieces of silver, and he dug a well. And that well became very important to their survival. And so they centered around that well. This was before they were ever taken down into Egypt. And so that was an important place for them right there at Shechem. Now, there was something else that had happened there. And that is that once they had come out of the land of Egypt, 400 years later, they come out into the wilderness. And when they were in the wilderness, we know that God gave Moses the law. He gave him the statutes. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. All the way that they were to live together. And there was something that Moses told them to do. Moses said, now when you get over in the land, when you cross that river, remember Moses didn't go with them. They hadn't taken Jericho yet. They hadn't gone in and taken the land. But Moses said, when you get over in the land, here's what you need to do. You need to gather all the people together. You need to gather together. You need to put six of the tribes, or half of the people, up on Mount Ebal. And you need to take the other half of the people, and you need to put them up on Mount Gerizim. And there's a valley that run down between them that was only about 500 yards, 1,500 feet, less than a quarter of a mile. That valley that run down through there, that was Shechem. That oak tree set in the middle of it, and they were to get those divided, and the priests were to stand in the middle down in that valley of Shechem, and they were to read the law. And they were to take it and to write it down. And those up on Mount Gerizim, they were to proclaim the blessings that would come upon them if they kept the law of God. And then those upon Ebal, they were to say, but if you don't serve God, here's the curse that will come upon you. And they wrote all the law and recited it all there in that valley. That had been several years before this. And so this was an important place. And now we find Joshua again gathering the people at the same spot, at the same place, and calling them to remember all that God had done for them, how that he had led them out, how that he had defeated the enemy, how that he had provided for them, to remember the promises that their fathers had made, the promises that many of them had made, and perhaps the new generations that themselves needed to make a choice of whether or not they were going to go back and serve other gods or whether they were going to serve Jehovah. And so that was an important place. It was an important place where that I met God when I was 13 years old at an altar, at a revival, and the Lord, I got before God, and I was in trouble. I can't tell you the time of the day. It was in the evening because we were having the evening service. I don't know whether it was 8:30 or 9 o'clock. I don't know. But I could take you to the place exactly where it happened that I was called before the Lord. And I had to make a choice. I had to make a serious, serious decision. Yep, there's decision involved in serving the Lord. There's choices that are made. I'm going to get into that just a little bit more. But I come to that point where just like the Joshua challenged them, are you going to serve God or are you going to go do what you want to do? Here's all the blessings that will come upon you if you serve Him. And here's all the curses that will come upon you if you don't. Yeah, I heard the gospel. I heard it preached that there was a devil's hell out there that awaited all those who rejected God and did not serve Him. And I'd heard that there was a place that was provided, a place that I didn't work for, a place just like the land that they had. They didn't till the ground. They didn't plant the trees. They didn't do all of that. God had given it all to them. And I'd heard that there was a place that God had prepared for those who would serve Him. And I was in trouble. And I was called upon, not so much by the preacher, but by the Holy Spirit as He worked in my heart to decide you this day whom you're going to serve. What are you going to do? It's all before you. Whatever mom and dad did that was good is not going to help you, because you got to decide for yourself. It was a critical choice. I got to move on. Shechem was an important place for the children of Israel. And Joshua knew that all of the weight of the things that had happened in the past, of their history and all of the knowledge that they had, that it would weigh upon them, hopefully weigh upon them to their good. And folks, the things that have happened in our past, the things that that have gone on before us, they're important in helping us as we make the critical choices that are necessary to go forward. Now, let me talk a little bit about choice. Decision, you can call it decision, but it's, Joshua referred to it as choice. But that's what separates us from the rest of creation. We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and He gave us free will. Free will is free choice. You can choose. You can choose what direction you go. You can choose what you're going to do. You can make a decision of how you're going to go forward. Animals and the other creatures in God's kingdom, they're very much moved by nature. And yeah, they may make some minor choices, and they can be trained to do certain things. But certainly they're nowhere even close to mankind, who has the ability to choose his destiny, to choose where he's going to go, what he's going to do, the kind of life he's going to have, whether or not he'll be blessed by God, or whether or not he'll be cursed by God. And so we find that God gave us this ability to do that. And then by His Holy Spirit, He helps enable us to make the right choices. Not something that we did, but He helps us if we'll listen to Him and we'll follow the directions that He gives. And so we are separate from all of the other creation by this ability to choose. This ability to choose. And folks, I want you to understand that you have in your power to choose which direction that you're going to go. Will you go toward God, or will you go away from God? What you're going to find is that you might fool me, you might fool mom and dad, you might fool everybody in the community, but you won't fool God. These people probably thought they had Joshua all fooled, that he didn't know that they were still serving other gods in their actions and their thoughts and all these things. But Joshua was very keen of that. He said that you need to put away the gods that are among you, and don't entangle yourselves into the societies around you, because they don't serve your God. They don't serve Jehovah. They serve their own gods. And if you entangle yourself with them, you will suffer a great consequence. And the consequence is that even though God has been good to you up to this point, He will bring evil upon you, or bring trouble upon you, if you turn away from Him. There's been many, I believe, that have pledged that they're going to serve God. They've made a decision. They have made a choice, perhaps in a moment of emotion. We'll talk about that in a moment if I don't run out of time. But as the world has pulled upon them, and as they looked at all their neighbors around them that were doing this and doing that and enjoying their gods, their gods of sports, or their gods of recreation, or whatever that it might be, if, pursuit of money, a pursuit of fame, whatever that it might be that they're pursuing, and people have been pulled into that, and they've turned away from God. And you know, one of the things that has broken my heart a lot is to see singers, particularly talented, that started out their singing careers singing in church, singing praises to God, but because the world enticed them with gold and silver and popularity and fame, that they were pulled that way, and they served other gods, and they got into a miserable life. Oh yeah, they might have had money, they might have had fame, and all of those things, but they turned away from God and got pulled into the world. And Joshua's warned us about that. They made choices along the way somewhere. Somewhere along the way, they were faced with choices. Well, do I go to the bar and sing instead of church because I'll get paid more or because that more people will hear me sing? So all along the way, they made critical choices in the pathway that they took. Every one of us who were adults made choices as we were growing up. Some were good and some were bad. But those choices determined our destiny in a lot of things, particularly in this life. But more importantly, our eternal destiny has got to come down to the choice that you make of whether or not you will pursue God or whether or not that you will turn away from Him. Now, I want you to notice that choice is both a blessing and a curse for humanity. For that's why that they were instructed to put half of the people up on Mount Ebal and half of the people up on Mount Gerizim to show that if your choice is to serve God, there's a great blessing that goes along with it. But if your choice is to turn away from God, there's a great curse that comes along with it. So God gave us this thing called free will, and it's a wonderful thing to have. And what one of us wants to give it up? There are many nations upon this earth that don't enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy in America. Do you want to give your rights up? Do you want to give your freedom up? Do you want to give your freedom of choice up and have somebody to tell you everything that you have to do and not give you any freedom of choice? That's one of the greatest things that we possess is freedom of choice. But comes with it blessings and cursings. And if we make the wrong choices, then we will suffer for those things. We've got an election coming up this year. I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but I tell you to seriously consider what the options are out there, because the choices that we make will help determine the direction of this country. You're sitting here today free. You're sitting here today enjoying the wonderful blessings of America because our ancestors made tough choices. They made hard choices. But I tell you what, I believe they consulted God. They were men of God. They were men who were not afraid to stand up in public and to write into the very Constitution of this nation and the Declaration of Independence that we receive our freedom and we're all created equal by our Creator. And that they acknowledged God, that He was the God of all creation. They acknowledged that. They made choices which you're enjoying today because of the choices they made. That's exactly what Joshua is telling these children here. You're enjoying what you have today because of choices that were made before you, and you're enjoying those blessings today. And certainly, folks, we are as well. And so there is a curse and there is a blessing to be had. And we need to make those choices with full knowledge and intelligence. Now, that's extremely important. Now, I don't believe in just an intellectual religion, but I don't believe in just an emotional religion either, because that'll get you in trouble if you act entirely on your emotions without considering the reality of truth. Then those emotions will get you in trouble. And I fear there's been many that in the emotion of a revival has made a decision or made a proclamation and then didn't stick to it. When the emotion was gone, so was their religion, and they were back out in the world. That's the danger of making an emotional decision or emotional choice. And Joshua is warning them against that. And so what does he do? He brings before them all of their own history. He brings it all up for them to look at. Here's what God did. God called Abraham and brought him here. God brought Jacob back here. He sent him down to Egypt for a reason. The reason he sent him down into Egypt and his family was so that they would become a great nation. They would be in a seedbed of growth, and they became a great nation. They turned from 70 souls into over 2 million souls. That when they came out of Egypt, they were a nation. They were strong. They were able to do what God intended for them to do when He promised Abraham on this very spot that I will give this land to your posterity. But they had to be strong enough to fight the fight. They had to be strong enough to go into battle. And so He made an army out of them. And as they came out of Egypt and God blessed them and gave them their enemies before them, the fear of them preceded them, that when they got to that river of Jordan and got ready to go over and take Jericho, I believe the people inside those walls of Jericho were shaking in their boots. because they had seen and heard how God had blessed them. And so the fear of them had gone on before them. And so all of these things, Joshua was saying, now I want you to consider these things. I want you to think about them. If it were not for God, Jehovah God, you wouldn't be here. You wouldn't have all of these things, but you can lose them. You can lose them if you refuse to serve Him. And guess what? I don't have the time to get into it, but all I got to do is go over into the book of Judges about four or five chapters over, and you'll see what happened. It says, there arose a generation after Joshua and the elders passed away that knew not the things of God, and they served the gods of their neighbors. They served other gods. And eventually the land was taken away from them, and they lost it all. And so that choice has to be made. Choices are to be made with the intelligence, with the consideration rather than emotion. Joshua puts all these things before them. He says, I want you to consider them. I want you to think about them. A few weeks ago, I preached on where the Jesus said that except you are willing to leave mother and father and sister and brother and leave all these things behind, that you cannot be my disciple. In another place, he said, what person, what king, getting ready to go out to war would not consider whether or not that he has the ability to win the war? What person that's building a house wouldn't consider whether or not that he had what was necessary to finish the house once he started it? And so Jesus is saying the same thing. Take the knowledge that you have and let that knowledge think about those things, and let those factor in to the choices which you make. God does not want us to serve Him at one moment just because that things are going well and because there's a big emotion that's going on. He wants us to serve Him in the valleys as well as on the mountaintop. And we talked about that in Sunday school this morning. And a lot of that has to do with choice. Joshua presented the facts. Here are the facts. Now, with all the facts and all that you know, what are you going to do about it? And what a choice are you going to make going forward? So, all of that plays into it. The experience of others plays in as well. That has an important aspect. Not all people are brought up into a Christian home. I was. I thank God for it every day. I thank God that my mother and my father tried to serve the Lord, took me to church, made sure that I was exposed to the truth. I saw how their life was. I experienced being in church with other Christians. I experienced being gathered around the altar and praying. Those were important factors in my life. So the experiences of other people helped me to make decisions and choices. I wanted what they had. I wanted to be like them. I wanted to enjoy the same God they enjoyed. And so the experiences of other people make a difference. And you as parents or grandparents, your experiences are going to have an effect upon your children, because when they're called before God, as these were, and they're presented with the facts and reminded of the experience, where's their mind going to go? Is their mind going to go back to the time that they remembered, my mom and dad always went to church? They didn't look for an excuse to get out of church. My mom and dad, when they sat around the kitchen table to figure out their expenses, they always made sure they put the Lord's part aside and made sure that they got to the church. Are they going to remember that? Or are they going to remember about you that you went to church only if there was didn't have anything else to do? But if the ball game was going on, you went to the ball game. Or if there was a picnic going on, you went to the picnic. Those are experiences of others that are going to influence them when they come down to have to making their own choices. You have an input into that. We have an input into our families, but also those that are around us. And so we learn from the experience of others who made the same choice. I know that as I was growing up, and I learned that my parents taught me that you don't have to experience that the stove is hot by touching it. Take my word for it. I've been there and touched it, and it hurts. And so if I learn by their experience, I'm far better off when I make the choice of whether or not I'm going to touch the hot stove. So it is with the choices of life. Did you make the choices to pursue the things of the world and let the things of God diminish and deteriorate in your family and in your life? If you did, I guarantee you that there is a curse that goes with that. And the curse is that your children will follow the same way. They too will be attracted to the things of the world and they'll forget about the things of God. That's what Joshua was worried about. He was worried about the next generation and the next generation. And each generation has got to make those choices themselves, but we have an input into that. And when we make our choices, we need to consider not only our own experiences, but the experiences that we've observed by others as well. A reflection on your own choices, past choices, must be considered. They must be considered. Did you learn anything by them? Did you learn anything good or anything bad? All of those feed into the intellect. Now, there's one thing that I want you to understand. Indecision is not an option. Indecision is not an option. Why? Because indecision leads to incapacitation. I preached a message one time up in West Virginia on that. Indecision leads to incapacitation. Fear and not knowing what to choose and what to do leaves you in the middle, and you can't be in the middle. You're going to be on one side or another. There's a recording over in the book of Revelation about one of the seven churches in Asia, which it says that you're neither hot nor are you cold. I would that you'd be one or the other, but I cannot stand this indecision and being in the middle. You've got to be on one side or the other. And Jesus said, I'll spew you out of my mouth. And so you can't be on the line. You may think that you can, but the choice to be indecisive is the choice to not serve God. The choice to try to stay in the middle and not be as bad as your neighbors, but maybe not as good as the others that are going to church, but trying to stay in the middle. The majority of people that wind up in hell don't wind up there because that they shook their fist at God's face and said, I'm not going to serve you. They're there because that they did nothing. They just did nothing when confronted with the responsibility of choosing and following that choice. They just did nothing. And so that's not an option. Indecision is not an option. Joshua brought it down to today. He said, choose you this day. Now, it's time to make a choice. It's time to make a decision. Which way will you go? And he led the example. He said, now you can choose what you want, but as for me and my house, and his house must have agreed because he taught them and showed them by example, but as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And not only did he say that, but he followed through with it. And that's some things that you need to know about the choices of the Lord is, now quickly I want to just hit these three or four points. First of all, the hesitation is gone. You've done made up your mind and you're committed to it. I worry about when people are invited to come to the Lord and to commit, but there is a commitment involved. There's a choice, there's a decision, there's a commitment, all of those things, but the commitment of the heart is such that it will not change, that the hesitation is gone. Old Davy Crockett from Tennessee used to say, be sure you're right, and then go ahead. And that's what it comes down to, be sure of the direction you're going, and then go ahead, don't hesitate. Jesus said, no man is worthy to be my disciple who putting his hand on the plow looks back. That's what happened to Lot's wife. She hesitated. She was indecisive. She wanted to go with Lot and she knew what was happening, but she looked back. She hesitated. And so you need to be committed. You need to be committed to it without hesitation. Joshua openly avowed it. Don't be ashamed of it. Don't be afraid and ashamed to stand up and say, I have made my choice, and my choice is that I'm going to serve the Lord. I'm going to be at church on Sunday. I'm going to get up even though I'm tired. I'm going to make sure my kids get there because it's important for them to see the example. It's important for them to have all the right information, all the right data, all the right example so that when their time comes, that God calls them up before Him and says, what will you do with my son Jesus whom I sent to redeem you? What will you do with him? That they will be able to choose wisely and to follow Him. And to choose him and to follow him. Did Joshua make it known, he earnestly carried it out. He earnestly carried it out, which was an example of his whole life. He'd come down to the end of his life. It wouldn't have done any good for Joshua to get up and say, but as for me and my house, I'm going to serve the Lord, when he only had a few more days to live. But the people that were all there could look back over Joshua's life and see that he had served the Lord, that he had fought the fight, that he had done all that was necessary, and that he had exalted God in all things. And so he followed through and earnestly carried out all that he said he was going to do throughout his life. And so critical choices. We're faced with choices every day about life things. Now, it didn't make a whole lot of difference this morning whether I wore a pink tie or whether I wore a blue tie. But I made that choice. But it doesn't affect anybody's life. But there'll be choices that will come your way in the things of this world that are essential that you critically think about them before you make those choices. You may wind up in jail. Just because your friends decide that it's okay to use drugs, that's no reason that you should do it. You should seriously consider, what are the results of that? What are the results of if my friends say, well, there's nothing wrong with having a little bit of alcohol and let's just go have a good time and get drunk. There's a young lady in jail right now that there's many of them, I'm sure, that's on the news every now and then because last year on the 4th of July that she had had too much to drink and she went out and she ran into a policeman and took his life in a car wreck down in Nashville, and she's sitting in jail facing that. And so the choices that you made may seem like that, well, they're not really significant, but think it through. What is the end result of you making that simple choice, that little turn in the road that's going to lead you in the wrong direction? See what happened to others that made those choices and whether or not you want that to be your end. And so you have those critical choices to make. I'm going to close with this last thing. I'm going to give you two names. One of them is Gary Gilmore and the other is Nicholas Sutton. How many of you recognize either one or both of those names? Gary Gilmore or Nicholas Sutton? Anybody? Well, Nicholas Sutton was just put to death this week on death row. I'll tell you a little bit about him in just a moment. But Gary Gilmore, you may not know who he was. Gary Gilmore was guilty of murder as well. He killed three people back in the 70s. And he was sent to jail for it. He was in and out of trouble, in and out of trouble, in and out of trouble. And finally, he ended up going on a murder spree. And he was the first person that was put to death after the moratorium by the federal government was removed from capital punishment. And so his place in history is that he was the first person put to death for their crimes once that the federal government removed the moratorium on capital punishment. But what I want you to understand is about his life. You see, there's no evidence that he ever repented. The last thing that Gary Gilmore did was have a big party. He had a big party, a big celebration before that he went to the death chamber to give up his life. That's all he cared about was partying. And so there was no change in him. Regardless of all that had happened, there came a point where that there was no more opportunity for choice. And he died the way that he lived without God. Now, Nicholas Sutton, from what I heard and what I read and what I saw, he was guilty of the same crime, deserved the punishment that he got for taking the lives that he did. But the last word that come out of his lips as they took his life was, I want to thank Jesus for saving my soul, and I want to thank God, and I want to encourage you to don't give up on Jesus. He won't give up on you. Now, something happened to that man, and he still had opportunity after he made the bad choices, which resulted in the taking of his life. But along the way, he seems to have made the most important choice, and I can only know by the testimony that he gave when it came right down to the end, and when he sat there on death row and they were taking his life, the last words that came out of him was thanking God for saving his soul. That's the difference. There comes a point where it will be too late to make a critical choice. The thief on the cross had one last opportunity. There were two thieves. One chose one way and one chose the other. And the one who chose Jesus said, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus said, you made the right choice. Today thou shalt be with me in paradise. What have you done with your choices? Will this be your last opportunity? What will you choose? He's before you. You called before him. Choose you this day whom you will serve. Brother Jake, if you've got a song, I leave that invitation with you. That's all I can do. I can't do any more than Joshua did to the whole nation of Israel, which is say, here are the facts. Here's all that I know. Look upon your own memory. Think about the experiences of yourself and others. Look out into the future as to what the cursings and blessings are, and choose you this day whom you will serve. Go ahead, Brother Jay.
In the book, let's do number 38.